Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome, dear listener, to Fear from the Heartland. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley. Set aside some moments now and take an adventurous ride on a journey into the psyche of some talented writers. They will dig into your being and titillate you. Oh, I love that word, titillate. While the stories may not all take place in the Heartland, I am delivering them to you from the Heartland. My intention is to strike fear and confusion into the mind, soul, and yes, the heart. This is Fear from the Heartland. Hello, Heartlanders, and welcome to Season 7, Episode 7 of Fear from the Heartland. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley. Hey, Heartlanders, you guys patrons yet? Visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to join the club. You'll get ad-free versions of this and all our other podcasts, including hundreds of standalone releases from our audio archives dating back to 2012. It's a great way to show your support, and you get a whole lot for it. Stop. Hit the like button. Subscribe. Do all the things everyone begs you to do on YouTube. Please. Have you done it yet? Okay. Scary stuff. Oh, wait. Nearly slipped my mind. Stick around until the very end for a special announcement. Lobotomy is the solution for all mental illnesses. It's a no-brainer. The lobotomy was a success, Tom said absent-mindedly. I was so angry the doctor messed up my lobotomy. I gave him a piece of my mind. Someone suggested I get a lobotomy. Trying to stay open-minded. Author James Flynn and our friends from Bellox Books brings you tonight's story dealing with, you guessed it, lobotomies. Let's get after it. They travel to Kanja to find a hairy ape, the one they had seen online that featured on the tape. A boat and then a bus took them to the island. Then they traipsed the mangroves, searching for the giant. Confronted by the beast, they stood and gawped and gaped. Was it all for real, or just a clever fake? And now, Ignorance is Bliss by James Flynn, Bellox Books. Ignorance is Bliss. They traveled to Kanja to find a hairy ape, the one they had seen online that featured on the tape. A boat and then a bus took them to the island. Then they traipsed the mangroves, searching for the giant. Confronted by the beast, they stood and gawped and gaped. Was it all for real? Or just a clever fake? As the small ferry chugged away from the mainland Saigon, Eric buzzed with an immature excitement. He had done a fair bit of planning and preparation to make this trip happen, many months of it in fact, and now, at last, it was taking place. He was traveling to Kanja Island with a friend, and after a hectic morning navigating through the bustling streets of Saigon, they were now on the final leg of the journey, crossing the Shaidap River. They were both sat on a long wooden bench that lined the edge of the noisy vessel, facing inwards towards the cars and mopeds that were parked along the center strip. Eric's friend Mac was roughly the same age as him, shared the same taste in music and beer as he did, and on occasion laughed at the same jokes. But from here, the similarities ended. Eric was from the States, whereas Mac was from Australia. And whereas Eric had a jovial, enthusiastic aura about him, Mac had that Australian bluntness that people either loved or hated, coupled with a bag full of personal issues that could have been described as paranoid at best or psychotic at worst. It wasn't that Mac was completely void of charm, though. An accusation like that would have been unfair. During the few years that Eric had known him, he had managed to make people smile, and he had even charmed a few ladies in the park. And it was entirely possible to engage in deep, meaningful conversation with the man. Catch him on the wrong day, though, in the midst of one of his moods, and people would sometimes wonder what institution he was on day release from. Was Eric foolish for inviting his temperamental friend on this trip? Probably yes, but that was Eric all over, amiable to the point of being foolish. And besides, he was actually trying to help him. Mac's mood swings had been intensifying as of late, and Eric thought that a little trip like this away from the city might clear his head a bit, although the circumstances were a little unorthodox. Or very unorthodox. "Do you really think we're going to find Bigfoot on this island?" scoffed Mac, shifting his weight on the wooden bench to face Eric. Eric was gazing across the choppy water over towards the harbor of the island. "Something is over there. Something." Mac sighed, shaking his shaven head. "You spent too much time on that laptop of yours. Too much time on that interweb." "You've seen the video. You've seen it for yourself." "Ah, another bloody online video," cursed Mac. "They are all the fucking same. Don't mean a thing." "Well, what have we got to lose? If there's nothing over there, at least we'll get a little holiday out of it." "Yeah, I suppose," grunted Mac, shrugging his shoulders. As one of the most scenic preserved areas in Vietnam, Can Giu was always worth visiting. On any given day, one could be treated to the sight of rare birds fluttering among the tropical trees, crocodiles basking in the shallow lakes, macaw monkeys darting and scrambling over the dirt roads and narrow pathways, and huge fish swimming along the coastline of the sandy beach. This was no conventional wildlife trip, though, not by any means. They weren't traveling to the island to see birds, crocodiles, or monkeys. They were traveling there to find a certain hominid species whose very existence was the source of furious online debate. For several years, you see, a video of a bipedal creature had been circulating on the web, and if rumors were to be believed, the video had been filmed on Can Giu Island. The Can Giu creature, as it came to be known, traipses through a patch of dense woodland during the short video and strongly resembles the legendary animal that most people refer to as Bigfoot. Like most video clips of this nature, the filming is extremely shaky throughout, and the owner of the material is unknown, giving rise to a large amount of skepticism and doubt. But despite this, the lucid sections of the tape are powerful enough to have convinced many people, Eric included. The trip was naive, some would say. Others would even call it crazy. But so what? They were a couple of 30-something males with no strings attached to them, little responsibility hanging over them, and plenty of free time. They were embarking on a Bigfoot adventure. Like it or lump it. After the ferry had docked at Can Giu, the two of them got on a green bus that took them into the heart of the island. The bus journey was a fast white-knuckle ride with traditional Vietnamese music ringing out from the driver's dashboard radio. Their spines rattled with every pothole and dip in the road. Their rucksacks slid across the leather seats with every turn, and at times they feared for their lives, but they made progress quickly. Before they knew it, they were jumping off the bus at a remote stop and then trekking across a field of long grass with wooden huts dotted across it. "Is this where we're pitching up?" asked Mac, his tanned, troubled face dropped slightly as he surveyed the wild grass. "It certainly is," Eric now held a map of the island in his hands, a low-quality sheet that he had printed out on someone's computer back in Saigon. "We're going to have to grease a couple of palms when the locals come along, but we'll be okay." "I trust you have done your research and made your phone calls," smirked Mac, well aware of his friend's diligence. "Couldn't we have rented out one of those wooden huts, though?" "Nah, they don't run that kind of service here. It was hard enough trying to convince them to let us pitch up a couple of tents." Mac considered this for a moment in his paranoid, over-analytical way. "What kind of service do they run, then?" "No service at all, really. What do you think this is, Disneyland? Center Parks?" "I was just wondering." "They said there's a patch of flat grass over on the west side of the field," said Eric, pointing over towards the semi-distance. "Let's get ourselves over there." By sunset, they had successfully erected both of their tents with minimal arguing and bickering, paid off an arrogant, brutish local who clearly hadn't graduated from the School of Good Manners, and had unpacked the portable gas cooker and a couple of tins of beans. So far, so good. But the real work would begin tomorrow morning, when their search for the Kenjo creature would commence.
"Will you stop complaining? The mosquitoes weren't that bad," sighed Eric. He was sweeping away some low-hanging branches, trekking through the mangrove forest, listening to Mac moaning behind him about his night's sleep.
"I heard you snoring after about 10 minutes, so they couldn't have bothered you that much."
"That may be so," gruffed Mac. "But 10 minutes after that, I woke up to find myself being eaten alive."
"I told you to bring a mosquito net. Anyway, let's stay focused and cover some ground, shall we?"
They were making their way through the island's thick leafy terrain, climbing over lumpy bergara tree roots protruding from the ground and cutting their way through thorny bushes. Their intended destination was the site of the infamous Bigfoot video, and Eric had circled the map with a felt pen where he believed it to be.
"How do you even know that the video was filmed down here?" asked Mac, treading carefully over the dry, root-ridden ground.
"Because I've done my homework," sniffed Eric.
"And what are we going to do if we actually see this thing?"
"Take as many photos of it as we can."
"For who?"
The midday heat was putting Mac into one of his cynical moods, and so Eric tried his best to steer things in another direction.
"For me, for you, and for the advancement of science. But more importantly, if you get a good shot of it, I'll buy you a beer when we get back to Saigon. How's that?"
"What kind of beer?"
Mac whined, swatting a fly away from his face.
"Any beer you want, my friend, and I'll even throw in a bottle of champagne for good measure."
"I'll remember you said that," grunted Mac,
huffing and puffing in order to keep up with Eric's unrelenting pace.
"And don't forget, you can visit the beach while we're here, too," added Eric. "You like beaches, don't you?"
"Well, a beach would be better than hacking through these poxy vines."
Eric ignored the whining and kept up the pace.
"I knew it was a mistake to bring him."
On and on they went, marching through the green curtains of the humid forest, following Eric's flimsy map. Their surroundings were dreamlike in their natural, untouched way, and the wildlife that chirped and scurried around them was worthy of a zoologist's wet dream. Dragonflies the size of small birds whizzed about frantically, rats darted in and out of the holes in the dry soil, huge termite mounds protruded from the bergara tree trunks like black cancerous tumors, and every now and then, if they squinted hard enough in the right direction, a small cluster of macaw monkeys could be seen swinging and climbing across the spindly overhead branches. When they reached a certain point, Eric stopped and trembled with excitement.
"This is it," he whispered. "Just over there. That's where Bigfoot was captured on film."
Following Eric's line of vision over towards the other side of a small stream, Mac nodded his agreement.
"Yeah, that kinda looks like it." "It totally is, Mac. That's the tree right there. The tree that he walks past."
"And how do you know it was a man wearing that Bigfoot outfit? It could have been a woman."
Eric turned and gave Mac an incredulous, stony look.
"Bigfoot outfit? Mac, you've seen the video. Whatever it is, it's not some prankster wearing an outfit. It doesn't even look that hairy for a start." All right, whatever. So what now? What do we do now that we're here?
We scan the area with our eyes peeled and our cameras ready. And if you see anything, anything at all, snap away.
Got it, muttered Mac with something resembling a sarcastic grin.
The sarcasm soon turned to irritation as time wore on.
Let's stop for a drink. I'm fucking gasping, scowled Mac, swatting flies away from his face. So far, we've taken 5 pictures of macaws, a picture of a pet, and about 6 pictures of meaningless foliage. I'm getting sick of this. I need a break.
Shh, shut up, will you? Eric crouched. There's something over there.
Oh, yeah, of course there is. Of course there's something over there. It's another fucking monkey. Let's just sit down for a while. I need to drink some water.
No, seriously,
hissed Eric through his teeth.
I can really see something over there. Over there between those trees.
As much as Mac hated to admit it, there did seem to be movement from the leafy shadows up ahead. Strange movement.
Oh shit, yeah. What is that?
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Well, it's definitely not a monkey.
Snapping a couple of photos, Eric added,
look at it. Standing upright. True, but it's what? Well, said Mac, squinting at the figure, it's definitely not Bigfoot either.
Edging closer towards the thing, Eric had no choice but to agree with Mac's observation. The creature standing in front of them was no hairy beast. It was no 7-foot-tall gorilla like King Kong. It was instead rather human-like. It was eating something.
What's it chewing on?
Said Mac, who was now as apprehensive as Eric. The figure before them was around 5 feet tall, completely naked with hairless skin, covered in scratches and bruises, and had something furry hanging out of its dripping mouth.
It's a rat, said Eric. It's eating a rat. It's eating a fucking rat's head. That's what it's doing.
For a few moments, the two of them watched on in stunned silence, trying to absorb and process the uncanny scene before them. The more they studied the naked figure, the more it looked like a human being. Its feet and legs were filthy from roaming across the bare soil, its arms were scarred from dragging itself through overgrown brush, and its facial hair had grown into a bushy tangle that obscured the lower half of its face.
But it didn't stop it from eating.
Whether it was enjoying its meal or not was unclear. Its drooped shoulders and unanimated expression gave nothing away. There was only the crunch, crunch, crunch of its jaws against the rat's tiny cranium, the blobs of blood and spittle flecking its beard, and the tailed rodent carcass hanging from its filthy fingers.
That's a man, stammered Mac. That's a man eating a fucking rat, I'm telling you. Don't be ridiculous. We found Bigfoot.
Eric spoke firmly, almost proudly, but there was a trace of doubt in his voice somewhere.
That's not Bigfoot. That's a naked human being standing in the woods chewing on the head of a rat.
Backing off a little, Mac added,
do you know what? I don't really fancy saying hello. I'm off. Mac, wait!
Mac was off on his toes, leaping back through the big green leaves of the jungle, disappearing from sight.
Wait a minute, Mac.
It was no use. Mac was stopping for no one. And so, after taking one last look at the Kenjo creature, Eric rose to his feet and tried to catch up with his friend. The next morning, as the sun was steadily rising over the verdant landscape, casting the palm trees and bamboo huts in a warm glow, Eric sat outside his tent and flicked through some of the photos he had taken. Mac was still wrapped up in his sleeping bag, half asleep, but that didn't stop Eric from speaking out loud.
Even if it's a human being, we've still stumbled upon something extremely curious.
You could say that again.
Mac's voice drifted out of the tent like a crackly blown speaker.
I'd agree there's something extremely curious about a man roaming naked in the woods munching on dead rats. That's certainly curious to me.
I've got to get to the bottom of this, Eric said, thumbing through the pictures. I've just got to. Mac chuckled. Listen to Scooby-Doo out there. What? Scooby-Doo? The cartoon character was into solving mysteries. That was a dog, wasn't it? Said Eric. There was a stirring from inside the tent. The dog didn't solve the bleeding mysteries. It was... Yes, I know it wasn't the dog. I'm saying that. How can a bastard dog solve mysteries? Look, forget Scooby-Doo, shouted Eric. I'm telling you now that I'm going back over there today and I'm going to solve this puzzle. Are you with me? The tent shook. In for a penny, in for a pound, as the palms like to say. Why not? What else am I going to do? Lie in this poxy tent all day with the mosquitoes? That's the spirit, smiled Eric, putting the photos down. Now look, according to this map, there are a couple of buildings not far from where we saw that thing.
That thing? Thing?
Spat Mac, finally poking his head out of the tent. It's some fucking mutter roaming around in the forest. He's probably... All right, it's a man, a nutter. But what I'm saying is that there are a couple of buildings on this map, and I think we should check them out.
What do you think they are?
I suspect they're a couple of old storage facilities, leftover relics from the Vietnam War.
So
if I were some nutcase hanging out in the woods, I'd probably use a building like that to sleep in. I'd use it as a house.
A house?
Crumbled Mac, folding away the door flaps of his tent.
That loony doesn't live in a house. He lives in a hole in the ground. And that's on a good day.
Well, said Eric, standing up, there's only one way to find out. It took them less time to reach the desired location this time around due to their familiarity with the terrain, and by 10 a.m. they were close to the buildings Eric had noticed on the map. There's a long road just up ahead, he said, wiping some sweat off his brow whilst thumbing the map. And the buildings are at the end of the road. Mac frowned. Why is there a road all the way out here? This island was used by the Viet Cong during the war. There are several roads here and there, stretching all the way across it. You really have done your homework, haven't you?
I certainly have. Now let's keep our eyes peeled all the way.
With insects buzzing heavily in the air and the rising sun penetrating through the treetops over their heads, they navigated across the dry, rooty terrain, heading in the general direction of the road a short distance away. Before they reached the edge of the woods, however, their momentum was brought to a halt by a wailing sound. Eric stood frozen, statue-like, his eyes darting around like pinballs.
What was that?
Before Mac could even answer, the noise rose up again. Pointing towards an outcropping of trees just up ahead, Mac said,
It's coming from over there. Cameras at the ready, whispered Eric. Let's go.
Fueled by morbid curiosity, they followed the piercing yells and cries, their minds alive with a delicate mix of fear and wonder. And alas, when they reached the outcropping, they were treated to a sight that caused their jaws to drop like busted cash registers. Two semi-naked figures were huddled up against one of the brittle black mangrove tree trunks a short distance away, covered from head to toe in their own excrement, making a clumsy, uncoordinated attempt at what looked like fornication. It was hard to deny that they were human at this close range, their shit-stained skin far too pale and bald for any kind of wild primate, but they were clearly suffering from a form of neurological disease. One was female, with tangled hair matted to her back, and she clung to the tree with unmanicured hands, her scratch-streaked ass exposed behind her. The other one, a male, stood close behind her and groped her sweaty rump, heaving backwards and forwards but failing miserably to achieve real penetration. Viewed from this distance, it was like watching a couple of doped-up mental patients trying to perform a half-rehearsed dance ritual, or an amateur mud-wrestling duo who had indulged in too much moonshine before a bout.
I tell you what, said Mac after regaining the ability to speak. Next time he asked me to go on a trip with you, the answer's no.
Eric was taking photo after photo, snapping away with the zeal of an opportunistic paparazzi cameraman.
Shh, don't let them hear you. I don't think there's any chance of that, quipped Mac, studying their blank gazes and drooling mouths.
I've seen pond life with more awareness than they've got. Just a few photos and then we'll move on and find the buildings.
Once they had taken enough pics, they walked around the two dazed individuals and continued to follow the map towards the buildings, apprehensive as to what they might find when they got there.
"The Bigfoot myth has been debunked," said Mac,
as the two of them trekked on.
"What we're dealing with here is a bunch of misfits."
Eric couldn't kid himself any longer. He was slowly accepting the fact that Kanjo'd creature didn't exist. It certainly seems that way.
But who are these people?
"I don't know," sniffed Mac. "And I'm not sure I want to find out either.
Let's just check these buildings out and we'll go from there."
The road was dotted with small macaw monkeys who sat around grooming each other and fighting over food. The first building came into view.
"I've got a bad feeling about this," said Mac. "Join the club, but I've got to find out what's going on here."
The building looked like an old-fashioned army hangar or perhaps a long storage unit. Beige paintwork flaked from its crumbling walls and a couple of heavy wooden doors were at the front.
"Definitely a relic from the war," said Eric, drawing to a halt before the old structure.
"Yeah," conceded Mac. Casting his troubled eyes towards the floor, he added, "But somebody's been here recently."
There were footsteps in the dirt leading up to the doors, but Eric approached the building regardless.
"Whoa!" hissed Mac. "What are you doing? You're just going to walk in there? You've got no idea who's inside."
Eric stopped, hesitated, and considered his friend's alarm. For a moment, he looked unsure of what to do, his mouth opening for a reply, but before he could say anything, one of the old wooden doors creaked open, and a hatted man peered out at him.
"You're early. I wasn't expecting you for another 2 days."
Caught in fight-or-flight mode, Eric and Mac sized the man up cautiously. The face under the brim of the hat was puckered, pointy in an unattractive way, and had the kind of prominent cheekbones one would expect to see on a malnourished peasant. But there was nothing weak or desperate about this man. His posture was rigid, and a certain amount of bulk was detectable underneath the weathered garments that hung from him. Noticing Mac further down the path, his demeanor shifted.
"You've brought a friend?"
"I think you might be mistaking me for someone else," stuttered Eric. "We were just seeing who was around."
"Seeing who was around?"
said the man incredulously. Eric noted the accent. "French."
"So who is he? A forgotten recluse from the French colonial era?"
"Look, sorry to bother you, but there have been some strange sightings on this island, and we're here to see what we can find."
At this, the Frenchman's face turned to stone, and he began to retreat back into the doorway.
"Go right ahead, gentlemen. Good luck."
Wait a minute," Eric yelled. "We're just a couple of guys from Saigon. We're not..."
"Just a couple of guys, eh? Just a couple of guys with cameras.
We won't take any photos. We just want to talk to you, if that's okay."
Casting his acerbic stare towards the cameras in both of their hands, he spat,
"I'm sure you've taken plenty of photos already."
"Well, some, but..."
"How about these?" said the Frenchman after a moment's thought. "I'll talk to you, but only if you delete whatever pictures you've taken on this island."
Eric thought about this for a bit, fingering the camera as though it were a stress ball.
"All right, if that's what you want."
The man stood firmly in the doorway, taking his time. Then,
"I hope you're not journalists or reporters."
No, not at all," said Eric.
"Well, in that case, come in."
The interior of the building was what you would have expected it to be, sparse, undecorated, and musty. Just a long hall with some items here and there. A hard mattress was positioned in one corner, a pile of tattered paperback books on the floor nearby, and down towards the other end of the room, Eric thought he could see a rudimentary kitchen set up, although it was really no more than a rusty gas canister and some pots and cups. After a certain amount of coaxing, Eric had ascertained that the man's name was Baudelaire. Dr. Baudelaire, to be precise. He was now pacing slowly around the dust-swirled innards of his abode while Eric and Mac sat on the floor.
"How did a doctor end up living out here like this?" asked Mac, gazing up at a cobweb on the bare concrete ceiling.
Eric rolled his eyes at his friend's bluntness, but the doctor wasn't too fazed.
"Is that jealousy I detect in your voice?" said Baudelaire dryly. "Or pity?"
"Neither," shrugged Mac. "Just curiosity, I suppose."
The doctor lingered by a barred, grimy window and clenched his jaw.
"It's a fair question. My great-grandparents lived here in Vietnam before the war, and after the war, during the 80s, they brought me here now and then."
He exhaled through his nose.
"When I left France a few years back, Vietnam was the obvious choice."
"Why did you leave France?" Eric asked. The doctor resumed his pacing, looking irked.
"What is this exactly?"
"Nothing, we're just what?"
Eric muttered and stuttered, not wanting to upset the doctor anymore. This hesitancy was obviously annoying for Mac, however, because he piped up and spoke on Eric's behalf.
"We're trying to find out why there are naked, zombified people roaming around in the forest. Could you shed some light on this for us?"
Eric looked away out of embarrassment, but the bluntness of the comment seemed to kick Baudelaire into gear.
"I presume you're referring to my patients. Now, let me make myself clear here. I'm under no obligation to talk to you about my business, but I'm willing to do you a favor if you'll do one for me."
"What's that?"
said Eric, shifting his weight on the hard floor.
"Don't go," the doctor waved a hand, "broadcasting my business online or elsewhere. I enjoy my relative anonymity here on the island."
"Like I said, we're not journalists."
"Wrong," huffed Baudelaire. "Everyone's a journalist these days. Everyone has one of these channels or websites."
"I see what you're saying," nodded Eric. "Don't worry, we won't shout about your business online."
Baudelaire loosened a little, his shoulders sagging under his creased button-up shirt.
"People come here to be happy, and I help them to become happy."
Eric and Mac wore confused expressions.
"To put it another way, I help people to become less conscious. My clients are often people who've encountered hardships in one way or another. Live tough lives, but not always."
Eric cleared his throat. "Are you saying that those people out in the woods?"
"I'm saying that a lot of human beings want to be less aware, and I help them along their way."
"Why do they want to be less aware?" said Eric.
"So that they can be more content."
"I don't understand."
The doctor slowed his pacing again, addressing them both directly.
"Awareness equals pain. Unawareness equals contentment. A cat is more content than a human, and an insect is more content than a cat. An insect does not spend its days fretting and worrying about the future. It does not get depressed about its inevitable aging and death. It simply lives for the moment, content and happy in its obliviousness."
This time it was Mac who asked a question.
"And how do you make people less conscious?"
Standing there before them, his wide hat framing his face like a black corona, Baudelaire answered with a single word.
"Surgery."
"What, like brain surgery?" Eric asked.
Without a flicker of emotion, the doctor said,
"My patients come here to be lobotomized."
Mac's blue eyes lit up.
"Lobotomized? Like in that film, what's it called? One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?"
It was unclear whether the doctor got the reference or not.
"I sever certain connections between different parts of the brain."
Looking around the room, eyeing up the dusty floor and the cobwebbed corners, Mac inquired,
"Where do you perform these operations?" "Next door in my surgery."
Sensing the confusion, he added,
"The procedure is not as technical as you may think."
Eric suddenly remembered that the doctor had mistaken him for someone else when he first arrived. "Are you expecting another patient anytime soon?"
"I certainly am. He'll be here in a day or two."
It was Mac who eventually asked the next question, although it was on both of their minds.
"Can we watch the operation?"
After some consideration, Baudelaire replied,
"That, I suppose, is something you should ask my patient when he arrives."
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It was early afternoon the following day when Dr. Baudelaire's patient turned up. Up until that point, Eric and Mac had spent most of their time exploring the trails and pathways around the doctor's home, seeing what they could find. They had stumbled upon a series of underground tunnels that the North Vietnamese Army had used back in the 60s or 70s, along with some crumbling bunkers. It was interesting to see those old leftovers, educational even. But of course, their main focus was on finding some more of Baudelaire's liberated patients. And they didn't have to look very far. Every now and then, a stumbling, staggering, half-naked individual would appear amongst some foliage, roaming the terrain in an absent, unfocused manner. Eric was personally surprised by the variety of people who had chosen to voluntarily undergo the operation. During their walk through the wooded terrain, they had spotted a gray-haired woman playing with worms in a muddy ditch, a fat, tattooed man sleeping in a nest of leaves, a teenage girl eating ants directly from a nest, exposing her pale-ass cheeks to both of them without a care in the world, and a male adolescent making a bungling attempt at climbing a bergara tree, cutting his shins to ribbons as he repeatedly slipped and fell. One had to wonder how bad their previous lives must have been for them to choose this vegetative primitive state. Although deep down, Eric didn't really want to know.
"Why don't they just commit suicide?" asked Mac when they met up with Baudelaire later that day.
They were back in his house, sat in their usual positions while the doctor walked around in his restless manner.
"That's a fair question. Suicide, however, goes against every human instinct we have. It is not an act of weakness, as some people believe. It requires a huge amount of courage and determination."
"Yeah, but
think of it this way. I offer people one last chance at happiness. When they have reached the end of their tether, when their thoughts begin to turn towards suicide, I give them one last option."
"What do the Vietnamese authorities think of all this?" asked Eric.
"Money talks in Vietnam. Greased palms keep people at bay. A certain amount of money I earn goes to the small town officials here on the island, and in return, I get left alone."
"But how do they survive out there?" said Eric.
"The same way that I survive. We live off the land. Water, fruit, a little meat now and again."
"What about when they die?" Mac said. "Surely you can't have dead bodies lying around out there."
"Nature takes its course," said the doctor in his French twang. "There are plenty of hungry creatures out there in the forest."
Eric leaned forward. "You're telling me that people die out here in this forest, and the authorities turn a blind eye to it?"
"I'm saying that I provide a service that my customers are happy with, and that I provide the authorities with what they ask of me, and outside of that, it's out of my hands."
Baudelaire's posture then stiffened, his stride slowing down.
"But of course, if more and more people come sniffing around asking questions and taking pictures..."
Eric looked down towards his feet, avoiding a response.
"I trust that you have respected my wishes and deleted the photos you took on this island?"
Yes, of course."
A flicker of doubt flashed across the doctor's pockmarked face, and he opened his mouth to say something, but his words were interrupted by the sound of footsteps outside. The patient had arrived. Baudelaire opened one of the big wooden doors and a young man walked in. He was pale, thick-set, and had dark eyes and a shaven head. A small rucksack was slung over his shoulder, but nothing else. After a brief private chat with the doctor over by the kitchen area, he sat opposite Eric and Mac while Baudelaire made some drinks.
"How did you find this place?" said Eric.
"Word of mouth," muttered the young man nonchalantly.
The reply was vague, unsatisfactory, but Eric was discouraged from pursuing it any further by the sheer sullenness of him. He tried a different tack.
"What made you come out here?"
The man shrugged, staring away towards the wall.
"I know the truth."
"What truth?"
"The truth that we're all victims of our own birth. Thrown into the circus of life for a few decades, left to fight and suffer, until at last we inevitably start to decay."
Is there anything you enjoy in life?
Sleep is good. Always welcome an 8-hour respite from the pointlessness of it all.
Mac had become strangely silent in the young man's presence, so Eric continued.
What do you mean, pointlessness? You're born and then you die, he sighed. And then a few decades later, you're completely forgotten. Do you know the names of your great-great-grandparents? Do you even know what they look like?
No, I don't, admitted Eric. A sick chuckle fell from the young man's stubbled mouth.
But it's okay. You might become a celebrity. And if that happens, it'll take a little while longer for you to become forgotten. You'll have the advantage of having a few sheep-like individuals hang pictures of you on their walls, talking about you for a while. But so what? What difference would that make?
You can create your own point, your own meaning, Eric said, taking on the role of devil's advocate. Create your own purpose in life through some form of activity or art.
Yeah, let's create some art, scoffed the man. Then in a few billion years or so, the sun will engulf the earth and it will all be obliterated in a flash.
That doesn't make it a waste of time, argued Eric.
Oh, how so?
Eric, suddenly finding it rather hard to come up with a counter-argument, turned to Mac for support. But Mac looked as though he had slipped into one of his withdrawn moods for some reason or other, perhaps due to the nature of the conversation.
Well, said Eric, you're basically saying that if something has an ending, it has no point. But you could say the same thing about something that went on for eternity. If something went on for eternity, why would that make it meaningful?
Eric wasn't sure where he was going with this line of reasoning, and he wondered whether he was actually supporting the young man's views rather than weakening them. He was thankful when the talk was disrupted by Baudelaire arriving with the drinks.
That's enough philosophy for one day, gentlemen. Here, have some tea.
The four of them drank from dented metal cups for a couple of minutes, not saying anything. Mac finished his tea first, then broke the silence.
Do you mind if I watch your operation?
Slightly taken aback, the young man took his time answering. But then, after another one of his characteristic shrugs, he said,
Be my guest. My worrying days are over.
There was another building next door that served as an operation room. It was much smaller than the one Baudelaire lived in. Little more than a shed, really, and its narrow interior was furnished with a single long table that took up most of its space. Around the edge of the room, there was a cracked medicine cabinet, a rusty clock with hands that had long since seized up, and a dirty worktop with a warped surface. Baudelaire's patient was spread across the table in the center of the room, passive and calm, silently staring up at the flaky ceiling with his dark, defeated eyes. Baudelaire himself was flittering around near the worktop, arranging some small items that he had taken out of the cabinet. He was dressed in his usual attire, black shirt and black hat, the only difference being that his long hands were now covered with cloth gloves. Eric and Mac stood a short distance away from the table, intrigued and anxious in equal measure.
Are you going to give him an anesthetic? Eric asked.
Baudelaire turned away from the worktop, a vial of clear liquid in his hand.
The patient is about to be anesthetized, yes.
Mac, mesmerized by the proceedings, said, Where do you get your supplies from? The medicine, I mean.
Like I said, money talks in Vietnam.
So what is it?
Extracting some of the clear liquid into a syringe, the doctor said,
Ketamine, if you must know.
Eric frowned. Images of shady street deals flashed through his mind, packages delivered to the island and passed on by the locals. He wanted to ask more questions, but it didn't seem right to do so with the young man in front of him within ear's reach. He let it go. With the syringe prepared, Baudelaire approached the table, leaning over the young man like a tall crane.
Are you ready, sir?
Go for it,
huffed the young man in his flat tone. Baudelaire found a suitable vein on the inside of the man's elbow and sank the needle in.
In went the ketamine, bit by bit, and the patient's eyes became dilated and glazed, along with a jerky stiffness that took over his body.
Two more instruments appeared on the worktop, a small metal hammer and a long spike that looked suspiciously like an ice pick.
The technique that I use was perfected by an American doctor named Freeman back in the 1940s, said Baudelaire, picking up the contraptions. The brain is accessed via the eye sockets, and the connections between the prefrontal lobes and the thalamus are severed. The entire procedure is over within minutes. It's very quick.
Stepping away from the table, Eric mumbled, "I'm too squeamish for this." Mac, however, stayed put, expressing a keen interest in the proceedings. Baudelaire placed the tip of the ice pick in a small groove above the man's eyeball, underneath the eyelid, and held it there in place whilst holding the hammer in his other hand. He then raised the hammer, adjusted the angle of the ice pick so that it pointed directly toward the man's prefrontal cortex, and began tapping away like a carpenter putting a nail into a wall. The first tap of the hammer knocked the metal shaft up a few millimeters, the second tap a few millimeters more, and then the third tap caused the tip of the pick to break through a fragile layer of bone at the back of the patient's eye socket. The doctor tapped away some more.
"There we are," he said finally. "The brain has been penetrated. Now I just need to sever the connections."
Eric, who was whimpering in the corner of the room by this point, let himself relax a little.
"Surely that's the worst part over," he reasoned. He was wrong.
Baudelaire's method of severing the man's neural connections amounted to wiggling the ice pick left and right a few times, yanking it this way and that. As he did so, a dull, muted, squelching sound could be heard from deep within the young man's cranium, almost like a moist chewing noise, and it took every ounce of Eric's self-discipline to stop himself from vomiting. Baudelaire, on the other hand, beamed with satisfaction.
"There we are. Now I just need to withdraw."
The ice pick was then pulled out from above the man's eye, slowly but surely, until its entire blood-stained shaft was free. After giving the instrument a quick wipe with some cloth, the procedure was repeated on the other eye in exactly the same fashion, and then it was all over. While the doctor busied himself by putting all of his instruments and medicine back away, Eric and Mac looked down at the young man on the table. His expression had changed. The mouth was now permanently open, fish-like, and there was a loosening of the cheeks. Both eyes were bloodshot, lined with scarlet streaks, and they had a flat sheen to them as though some vital spark of intelligence had escaped them. He said nothing.
"That was brutal," gasped Eric.
"Brutal for you to watch," replied Baudelaire from across the room, "but not so brutal for the patient. He is at peace now. He has an emotional bluntness about him, a numbness that will enable him to glide through the rest of his days without any personal demons gnawing away at him."
"So when will he be mobile again?"
asked Mac, gazing down at the lobotomized man with a look that Eric had never seen on him before.
"The ketamine will wear off in about 30 minutes. After that, he'll be free to roam the forest."
Eric shook his head, still startled by what he had just seen.
"You know," said Baudelaire, "this procedure was carried out across the Western world for many years. JFK's sister was lobotomized exactly the same way."
"So why isn't it carried out today?" Eric countered.
"Oh, details, details," muttered the doctor, packing away his equipment. "Who knows? Anyway, you've now seen the operation."
Taking off his gloves, he added,
"I need to stay with the patient now until the anesthetic wears off. Then after that, I have some errands to run. So if you don't mind, gentlemen."
Yes, we're going to take a walk anyway," said Eric, taking the hint.
"Come on, Mac, let's go."
Mac slowly peeled himself away from the table, a strange look still present on his face. Turning to the doctor, he said,
"Can I come back and see him tomorrow?" "He'll be roaming free by tomorrow," replied Baudelaire, nodding towards the door. "If you can find him out there."
"I'll find him,"
stated Mac, his voice firm and resolute. Eric looked at his friend curiously. Then the two of them made their way back outside into the sweaty tropical heat. The next morning, as the two of them were packing away their tents, Eric looked over at Mac apprehensively.
"You're not honestly going to go back there, are you?"
"As a matter of fact, I am," he replied, stuffing a couple of pegs into a small bag.
I want to see how that guy is getting on.
You want to see how he's getting on? Listen to yourself, Mac. He had an ice pick rammed up into his brain. How do you think he's getting on?
Mac looked away at nothing in particular.
Oh, I don't know. That's why I want to go have a look.
Aren't you shocked by what you saw over there?
Yeah, it was quite shocking, I suppose.
But what?
But something about it is intriguing, too.
Eric threw a handful of poles down on the ground. It's intriguing, all right, and I'm sure the authorities will find it intriguing as well when they find out.
Mac finally made eye contact.
What are you on about?
What am I on about? As soon as I get a Wi-Fi signal, the first thing I'm going to do is put the photos online. The world needs to know about this shit.
You promised him you were going to delete those photos.
I lied. That nutcase is mutilating people out there in the forest. You can't get away with that.
Eric put his hands on his hips, shaking his head.
What's up with you anyway? Are you on his payroll now or something?
Look, just cool it, will ya? Calm down a bit. I'm gonna go back out there, have a little mooch around, and then we can be on our merry way.
Just be careful, sighed Eric. How long will you be?
I don't know. A couple of hours or so.
Glancing at his watch, Eric said, Look, meet me back here at midday. I'm going to try and find that beach.
Deal, said Mac, zipping up his tent peg.
See you then.
And with that, the two friends parted ways across the wispy field, making tracks before the heat of the equatorial sun became too intense. The beach wasn't too hard to find. It was a long stretch of white sand overlooking the choppy waves of the Pacific, palm trees waving in the warm breeze. Eric's mind was too muddled for him to enjoy the view, though. The lunacy of what he had witnessed swirled around his brain like a juiced-up carousel ride that couldn't be switched off. The young man's spiel had been depressing, to say the least. He spoke about life as though it was a torturous phenomenon that should be terminated, an accident of nature that needs to be extinguished. And he clearly wasn't alone, either. That was the most disturbing part. He was just one of many others who had willingly paid money to be lobotomized. Was life really that bad? Was consciousness really an unfortunate burden that needed to be decreased before someone could be truly content and happy? Then there was Baudelaire and the many questions surrounding him. Who was he exactly? How could he have the nerve to carry out such operations? Did he leave France of his own accord, or was he deported? And if so, what was he deported for? Surgical malpractice? Possibly. Possession of illegal drugs? Maybe. It was all speculation, of course, but after witnessing the ham-handed operation yesterday, none of it seemed that far-fetched. As Eric made his way back towards the campsite, the sun was high in the sky and blazing away like an angry flame, causing sweat to pour down the small of his back, dampening his shorts. It was something of a relief when the field came into view, although the relief was tainted with concern. Mac was nowhere in sight.
Where the fuck is he?
There was literally no sign of him, just the wooden shacks in the semi-distance and the flattened patch of ground where they had pitched their tents up the previous night. The only thing he could really do was wait, and so that's what he did. He waited whilst pacing the field. He waited whilst sitting down on his tent bag. He waited whilst biting his nails, and he waited whilst cursing his friend under his breath. And eventually, when the heat got too much to bear, he walked over to a shaded area underneath a palm tree and waited some more. 12 o'clock turned into 12:15, 12:15 turned into 12:30, 12:30 turned into 12:45, and when 12:45 inevitably turned into 1 o'clock, Eric leapt to his feet in a rage and started to rant and scream.
Where is that fucking prick? I'm gonna kill him when I see him!
He knew what he had to do, of course. He was going to have to trek back over to Baudelaire's neck of the woods and search for Mac over there. Suffice to say, he wasn't happy about it. By the time Eric reached the long road that led to Baudelaire's home, his anger had escalated to boiling point. Mac was a liability, and he was sick of putting up with his shit. The constant moaning, the constant whining, the constant sense of inner turmoil that he carried around with him, and now this.
He marched on, gritting his teeth. Reaching Baudelaire's converted house, he knocked on the big wooden doors. No answer. He tried pushing them open, but as expected, they were locked.
Where the hell is Baudelaire?
The only other building was the operating theater, so Eric ran across the leafy patch of open ground towards it.
Mac, it's Eric, where are you?
There was no reply, but when Eric reached the door of the theater, he discovered that it was open.
Is anyone here?
He said, poking his head in and looking around the musty room. The operating room was empty.
Where's the doctor? Out on a walk? Collecting food? Running one of his errands? Where the hell is Mac?
Panic flurried up inside him, causing him to dash around the small operation room in a flap.
Where is he? Where is he? Where the fuck is he?
There was a rucksack in the corner. Eric looked down at the bag, recognizing it immediately.
Mac's bag? Why has he left his bag in here?
Turning back towards the door, he shouted,
Where are you, Mac? I'll throttle you when I see you.
Running outside into the humid heat, he turned right and headed towards the old war bunkers. It was the only place left to search. It was now mid-afternoon and the mangrove forest felt like a green oven. Beads of sweat trickled down Eric's back in warm rivulets. Flies buzzed around his face, mosquitoes sucked away at his legs, and his fuse was getting shorter and shorter by the second. He had screamed Mac's name at the top of his lungs several times, yelling wildly into the leafy abyss, but his friend was nowhere to be seen. He was about to try again out of desperation, drawing in a big lungful of air, when he noticed a strange shape up ahead of him by the side of the dirt path.
Mac, is that you?
There was a figure perched on a rock about 100 yards up ahead, facing out towards the wild flora. Mac walked on, carefully watching.
Mac, what are you doing?
Mac didn't turn around. He just continued to stare off into the trees. There was something ragged about him, too. His shirt was ripped in several places, and he appeared to have lost both of his shoes.
Mac, what happened?
Eric was upon him now, standing over his shoulder, but still he got no response. Mac was still, silent, gazing away.
I said, what happened? Listen to me. We need to...
Eric's words trailed off as he got a good look at his friend's face. There was an alteration, a shift in his features that made him resemble the person known as Mac, but a different version of him. And there was no character there either, causing Eric to feel alone even though he was standing right next to him. Grabbing him by the shoulder, Eric spun him around to face him properly.
Speak to me. Speak to me, will you?
Eye contact was finally made between the two of them, but it did nothing to alleviate Eric's grief. If Mac's eyes had been replaced with marbles, there would have been more life in them. It was like looking into the pupils of a fish. Following this blank face-off, Mac then began to grunt and utter some half-words.
Speak to me. Speak to me. You.
Scratches lined Mac's cheeks, dirt caked the corners of his wet mouth, a foul smell wafted up from his protruding tongue, and his eyes were bloodshot, lined with scarlet streaks.
No! Eric cried. No!
Mac's lips then protruded slightly, forming an O shape, mimicking Eric's.
No. No.
Get up!
Screamed Eric, grabbing the collar of his ripped shirt.
I need to get you out of here. Get up!
Mac's face lit up and became animated at this, reminding Eric of the macaw monkeys out in the trees.
Get up! Get up!
Eric pulled and pulled, but his friend was just too heavy. Every time he managed to yank him up a couple of inches, he flopped back down like an overloaded sack of potatoes.
He did this to you, didn't he? That freak who calls himself a doctor.
Doctor,
wailed Mac, with drool spluttering from his mouth.
Doctor!
Oh, what's the point?
Cried Eric, stepping away from the spasticated remains of his friend. He was gone, ruined, unsalvageable. Besides, Eric's sorrow was now gradually morphing into fear.
Is the doctor insane? Am I next on the doctor's lobotomy list?
Frantic thoughts spun around in his head like crumpled garments in a tumble dryer. This was too much for him. Way too much. He was in a strange place, a foreign land. He was hot. He was sweating. He was confused. He was dizzy. And he was terrified.
Goodbye, Mac.
Eric was backing away, preparing himself to scarper, momentarily held in place by a last remaining piece of sentimentality that tugged at his heartstrings. This heartfelt emotion was misguided, though, because now that Eric was out of his friend's line of sight, it seemed as though he had already forgotten all about him. Mac was playing with handfuls of dirt, picking at random clumps of grass, lost in his own little fuzzy world. Wiping away a tear, Eric finally turned and sprinted. There was still no sign of Baudelaire as Eric crept past the old buildings. Maybe he was avoiding him, hiding away, worried about Eric's reaction upon finding his friend in an altered state. In fact, this seemed to be the likeliest option to Eric as he made his way back out of the woods. Flashbacks of Mac's odd, uncharacteristic behavior kept coming back to him as he walked. The way he had listened attentively to the young man's ideas, the way he had carefully observed the operation, and also the way he had been so keen and eager to get back out here this morning. Mac wanted this. This realization sent a chill down Eric's spine, but the more he pondered it, the more it made sense. Mac had that troubled way about him, the checkered past, the constant blues, the negativity, the pessimism. Hell, he was a prime candidate. Is he happier now? Is he more content? These were the questions that stalked Eric as he made his way back to the campsite and then to the bus stop. This twisted new philosophy refused to leave his mind, lingering around him like a cloud. A sense of guilt was also weighing down upon him. He was the one who persuaded Mac to come to the island after all, so he couldn't help feeling partly responsible for what had happened to him, despite Mac's apparent desire to go through with it. When the bus came rolling down the road, he boarded it and slumped down on the back seat, exhausted. By the time Eric made it back to the harbor, afternoon was turning into evening. The ferry chugged along the water, steadily approaching, and he stood in line with the other passengers waiting to board. Waiting in the queue, he unzipped a section of his bag and pulled out his camera. The many photos he had taken flashed up on the display, bright and clear. Should I or shouldn't I? The boat continued to approach. When his final decision came, he clenched his jaw and took a sharp intake of breath. Highlighting the delete all box on the screen, he placed his thumb over the button and, after a few agonizing seconds, pressed it. Once the deed was done, a peculiar sensation came over him. He felt lighter, perhaps, relieved. The ferry docked and Eric boarded the vessel with the crowd, bikes, and cars. Halfway across the Choydap River, Eric turned and watched the island recede into the distance, the thick mangrove trees shrinking down to small green dots. Kanjo Island had pulled him in with its mysterious allure. It had consumed him, spat him back out again, and taken away his friend. And in a roundabout way, it had also taken away his voice, because never again would he mention this fateful trip, never again would he mention the name Kanjo, and never again would he mention the macabre horror that had permeated his soul.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed tonight's tale, Ignorance is Bliss, by James Flynn and our friends from Velox Books. James Flynn grew up in the UK. An absurdist at heart, Flynn's tales tend to highlight the many paradoxes and predicaments that come attached to human existence. His work has appeared in Black Petals Magazine, Yellow Mama Magazine, The Scare Room Podcast, Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and several of his titles have been published by Velox Books. When he is not writing, James Flynn can sometimes be found haggling with staff members in secondhand bookstores, or wandering aimlessly through the streets of the secret city in which he now lives. James Flynn is willing to let AI clean the soles of his shoes, but he is not willing to let AI write his books for him. If you enjoyed tonight's story, hosted by yours truly, Paul J. McSorley, you can search my name on Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on YouTube for additional previous stories. If you'd like to hear more lengthy tales, be sure to take a look at my audiobooks, available now on audible.com, or just visit paulsbooks.net. That's paulsbooks.net. You can also find me personally on Facebook and Twitter. And with that, listeners, our weekly journey into the psyche has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us for tonight's episode and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And while you're at it, please remember to stop by our Apple Podcast page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts and subscribe. The charts are based on subscriptions, not listens. So if you haven't subscribed yet, I'd really appreciate it. I'm your host for Fear from the Heartland, Paul J. McSorley. I've enjoyed the titillation tonight. Ooh, there's that word again. Thank you for joining me. Hope to see you again next week at Fear from the Heartland.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.